We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show. We're recording this on the first Monday of the winter meeting, so there's probably going to be a lot of news flying in. There's already been a lot of news today, but over the next week or so, there'll be a lot to talk about. Today, we're joined by Rich Kaufman, who's been on the show a few times. Rich, what's up?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Pretty good. Scott, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm excited for the winter meetings. I was talking on Bronx Pinstripe's Twitter. It's almost like there's a game on, but there's not. So there's a lot of news flying in. So I'm excited for it and ready to see some good signings.
Yeah, and it's just comes just in time when the NFL season is starting to take a dip, and I feel like people are just waiting for the playoffs to come around. At least
what are you talking about? Wait, a dip? There's no dip. This was actually a great week. This was a great week in the NFL. The Jets destroyed the Giants. Just embarrassing loss. Patriots look like the Jets.
You stole the words from me. I was going to say I felt like I was watching a Jets game.
So yeah, it was a good week in the NFL.
All right, well, let's get to that Giants Jets game because obviously, Rich, you're a Giants fan. Scott, everyone knows you're a Jets fan. I was actually in Manhattan for the game. It was kind of fun to be around that atmosphere. The bar was going nuts. There was a Jets fan there that was. If you look up Jets fan in the dictionary, it was this guy. This bald guy, thick accent, probably just been beaten down by life and Jets terrible football for 40 years. Every time the Jets moved the ball more than a yard, he started the J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets chant.
No, he didn't. That's an exaggeration.
No, that's not an exaggeration. Not an exaggeration. And the Giants started chanting, Jets suck, Jets suck. It was a whole big thing. But that was an interesting game. What happened, Rich? What happened with the Giants?
I don't know. They've blown like four or five games this year in the last, I don't know, 5 minutes. I think it's time for Tom Coughlin to go. I think he's worn out his welcome, so to speak.
That has nothing to do with the defense just not showing up in the fourth quarter either.
Well, I mean, if it's that whole fourth and two bothers me so much, I don't even want to talk about it.
Well, no, we should talk about it because it's fun to talk about because it was such a controversial play.
I understand you want to end the game right there and go for the score, but you got to take the points. You got to go for three.
There's a lot of people who are on totally different sides of this. I was listening to Mike today on the radio, and he calls everybody an idiot who says kick the field goal because 10 and 13 are pretty much the same thing to him. Basically, it's two scores. You're not adding a score there. And the fact that the Giants couldn't stop anybody was, the reason why he says go for it. Give them the long field. So,
Rich,
I don't know. As a Jets fan, I was happy you guys didn't kick because we at least had the option to kick a field goal when we did drive down and didn't execute the touchdown drive.
Well, here's a question, Rich. Do you think if they took the points and it's 13-point lead, do you think the Giants still hold them?
Probably not.
So then, Coughlin was right to go for it.
I guess, yeah. I mean, and there's that earlier play, that fourth down, that the crowd wanted him to go for it and he didn't. So he probably, he changed his mind on that.
He's probably thinking, my offense is better than my defense. I'm going to let them try and win the game. It was kind of like, a different scenario, but when Belichick went for it fourth and two in Indianapolis a few years ago, right. He knew that his defense wasn't going to stop Peyton Manning. His best chance was for Tom Brady to get the 2 yards. That's probably what Coughlin was thinking.
Yeah, it was just the whole day was frustrating. Then you got Odell Beckham kicking the ball.
That was awesome. It didn't hurt you. It didn't hurt you though.
But it's just like what? Just you cannot do that. You cannot do that.
I know. I was so happy. I was like, oh, kick the ball again, dude. It's like I couldn't believe you kicked the ball. I was like, that's an obvious penalty. I don't care what happens.
Yeah.
I don't care what your intentions were. That's a penalty.
Very frustrating.
Dumbass. I was mad. It wasn't more than 5 yards.
The Giants are like a team, like a baseball team without a closer. Where they look awesome for 8 innings, and then their bullpen comes in and implodes. It feels like the last few minutes of every game, it's either their clock management or their defense is imploding and costing them games.
Yeah, and it's going to cost them the playoffs because...
Maybe. I don't know. That division is still up for grabs.
The NFC East is just a train wreck, so it's going to come down to who sucks less by at the end of the season. I mean, tonight, if the Cowboys win, right, they're still in it. It's ridiculous.
There'll be a game back, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the Redskins could really not lock stuff up, but they
It's not like they're good. They're not good.
No, they're the least
They only win at home. They don't win on the road. They're not a good team. So, I mean, yeah, anything can happen. Absolutely anything can happen. Literally a 6-10 team could make the playoffs, could win the division.
So, Rich, you think Coughlin's out after this year? You think this is it?
I think so. I think he's on the hot seat for sure. If they don't make the playoffs, forget about it.
I feel like there's been that narrative going into every season for the last, 5 years with him.
Yeah, but I think this is it. I think this is his last stand, I guess you could say. So
at some point, everybody's just ready for a change, whether it's him or actually him or not. They're just people are just ready for a change. And I feel like that's what the Giants fans are. Just give me somebody different.
He's 70 years old, right? I mean, come on. Time to.
But you see him coach a game like he did against the Patriots. And it's like, I don't think he's totally lost it.
No, he still wants to coach. Even if he leaves the Giants, he's still going to want to coach somewhere else. But
and he'll get a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
He needs to just retire.
You win 2 Super Bowls, you're going to, you'd be wanted somewhere. But I think it's time to draft a replacement for Eli and get a new coach.
You've already got Eli on the way out?
That was Ryan Nassib from Syracuse.
He was the heir apparent. That's not the answer.
Dude, quarterbacks can play now till they're 40, 45. Yeah, he could stick around for a while.
Is Brady going to play until he's 50?
He says he wants to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for him. I hope he does.
Why? Then the Jets aren't winning the division for the next 10 years.
I don't know. Last week he looked pretty old.
What are you talking about?
Uh, he, That one of the best highlights is the interception for a touchdown. Watching Brady try to tackle whoever it was that intercepted, that was hilarious.
Oh, so you're telling me he can't run? Yeah, we've known that for like 15 years.
No, you told me that he's the fastest he's ever been in his career.
In the pocket. I didn't say he was fast.
You told me this year Brady's the fastest.
I'm so pissed at you right now.
He's such an athlete.
I said he can move well in the pocket, which is true. That's a
best
true statement.
Ever. That's what I've been hearing. You're saying he's getting better, faster, more athletic as he's getting older. Totally looked it. Absolutely. I totally agree.
He's getting better with age. He's like a fine wine.
Yeah. I know. You guys should just keep holding on to that.
You realize that if the playoffs started this week, that it would be Jets traveling to New England for the first round of the playoffs?
Oh, boy.
That'd be awesome. Bring it.
I think the Patriots are still going to sneak into that 1 or 2 seed. Even though right now they're the 3 seed, but I think they can still get to the 1 or 2 seed.
Yeah, we'll see. Either way, good week for the Jets. Crappy week for you guys. Sorry about your bad luck. Let me have my week because it probably won't last. So
it's crazy. The NFL has had a lot of exciting finishes, you know, down to the wire games over the last couple weeks. It's like the Aaron Rodgers thing on Thursday night was insane. Last week, what was it? Last Monday, the Ravens scoring on the last second blocked field goal. It's like the NFL has a deal with the devil, and because they just get these, everything good happens to the NFL essentially.
The only problem with that Monday night game was it was Ravens Browns,
so, and no one was watching.
Nobody was watching, so nobody right. saw it until they saw SportsCenter the next day.
And he probably stepped out of bounds.
I heard about it, but I didn't even see it. I was watching Stat Tracker. That was the only thing I was watching.
Oh, yeah, because you were counting on somebody trying to win your fantasy game that week, right?
Yeah, I had Buck Allen, and he went off this week, which helped me, but I'm out of the playoffs in that league, so it didn't help me as much. Last week, if he had did what he did this week, I would have won. So, thanks, Buck.
Again, you can't be counting on Buck Allen to win your fantasy.
Kind of a beast, though. He's going to be a good keeper next year. He's going to be a late round keeper for me. It's going to be very valuable. I'm excited for him.
I'm happy for you.
And he's got a great name, Buck Allen. That's a good football name. It's a good sports name.
That is a good football name.
Yeah, I wish my name was Buck Allen.
We should change it.
I should to Buck Allen.
You'd be the best podcaster going.
Yeah, and now my podcast with Buck Allen. Oh, that's great. That is good.
The Bronx Pinstripe Show with Buck.
Yeah, you might get booted from that in the intro. Just the Bronx Pinstripe Show with Buck Allen. You can introduce yourself after we start. But
other than Buck Allen and Buck Showalter, I can't think of another Buck in sports. Joe Buck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You just ruined it for me.
No, he's not bad, man. He's not bad. Everyone gives him shit, but he's not bad.
He's better without McCarver, I think, because Reynolds and Verducci make him look so good.
Yeah, that's a good point. Next year, it should just be A-Rod. A-Rod and Buck.
All
that. That would be funny, actually. That A-Rod would be entertaining.
And A-Rod, even if the Yankees are in it, A-Rod can call it from the dugout because he's just DHing.
Alex Rodriguez and Joe Buck in a color commentary play-by-play role would be the most polarizing booth in baseball history.
Yeah, except now everyone is starting to love A-Rod. He'd be the good guy. It'd be perfect PR for A-Rod, actually. His team should set that up because everyone hates on Joe Buck. That's the easiest thing to do in on Twitter.
Yeah, but if A-Rod did national games, if he did like the Fox Game of the Week.
Oh, every week?
yeah. If there was like the two of them every week, I mean, I think everybody outside of the Yankees population, Yankees fans, still doesn't like Alex Rodriguez. I don't think they hate him as much, but I don't think they don't like him. So I think it would be great entertainment. It would be good TV.
He's starting to win the hearts and minds of the public. I really think you're underestimating that. Yes. The general public, the general baseball fan public.
The
I don't know. We'll see, I guess. I mean, it just if Barry Bonds can get a job in baseball again. And
You got Bonds, you got McGuire.
Oh, they're all in baseball. Pete Rose is the only one. Pete Rose is sitting there with his tuxedo, his black hair. He's just like wondering when his call is going to be. When am I allowed in? He's like, all I did was bet on my team. Everybody else cheated the game.
Yeah.
So, I just had a lot of confidence in my guys.
If you're Barry Bonds, why the hell do you want to be the hitting coach for the Marlins?
Baseball, man. He's a baseball guy.
To travel 162 games a year with like he didn't even play for the Marlins. It's not like he's doing it for the Pirates or the Giants, where he's got some ties from his career there. It's just, he just wants to go back to the grind of baseball, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's for the love of the game right there. That's what's
telling. He's got to start at the bottom and work his way up if he wants to, I don't know, if he wants to continue.
Maybe he wants to be a manager, I guess. I don't know.
Yes, I don't know.
So how is he allowed in the game and then Pete Rose isn't? I guess because it was an actual conviction, like it was black and white.
Steroids, I mean, you're not banned from baseball if you do steroids. I mean, if you do it for three times, you get caught three times, you are.
But don't you see a double negative here? This is, I mean, or not a double standard. This is a complete double standard. I just feel bad for Pete Rose. That's what it comes down to. Because the man, I mean, was one of the best baseball players, you know, of his generation and the history of baseball with some of the numbers that he did and the way he played the game.
It's hard to defend what Pete Rose did.
It's hard to defend what a lot of these guys do, though, but they're still around. It's just there's so many more of them. What if everybody was got caught cheating or got caught gambling? I mean,
but you have signs in the clubhouse that say no betting on baseball. Back, you know, in the steroid era, there were no – it was anything goes. So I think what Pete Rose did was worse than –
It was just accepted. That's all. It's just a mindset. Baseball was struggling, so they introduced steroids because we needed home runs to bring the game back, to bring the fans back in the seats, and to get the stadiums crowded again. I mean, it was a ploy by Major League Baseball. It was just accepted by baseball because it brought a lot of money. Whereas the other, where Pete Rose, it had no monetary value for Major League Baseball. It's all a bunch of nonsense. It's all a bunch of politics.
DraftKings and FanDuel's really missing an opportunity with Pete Rose. Making him the face of their advertisement.
He did one, though. He had one. It was called Sports Bop. Yeah. I don't even know if they're still around, but Sports. It was like a but it had something to do with fantasy and it was betting. I think it was a similar concept. Sports Bop? Maybe that's not right. It was something along those lines. It had something to do with betting.
That would be my first move if I was DraftKings CEO. I'd get Pete Rose on the phone, and he'd be the new face of my marketing campaign.
Yeah, but it's kind of a joke at the same time. But
what is fantasy sports? It's entertainment.
Yeah, it's a huge business right now too. I'm looking up the name of this website. What it was.
Well, I mean, still the whole thing with the Barry Bonds versus Pete Rose thing. My take is I can defend steroid use easier than I can defend betting on baseball, because at least with steroids you're trying to make yourself better to win, whereas Pete Rose was potentially throwing games.
No, he was. That's the whole thing. He wasn't throwing games. He was betting on him. He was betting on his own team.
And so now we're trusting Pete Rose as an outstanding individual. You're telling me if he needed to cover.
I'm not defending Pete Rose and what he did. This is not what I'm doing here. You're missing the point. The point is the both of these people, both of this the gambler and the steroid user, affected the game in a negative way by cheating the game. It's the same thing. It's the principle of cheating the game. These guys took steroids to get an advantage over other players and hit ridiculous amounts of home runs because of it. It affected the game in a complete negative way for a decade plus. Like, this was a much bigger problem than Pete Rose betting on a couple games. It was like some degenerate gambler betting on a couple games. That, in my opinion, I mean, honestly, I don't think it was. It's the same principle. I mean, it's both cheating the game.
I just think one is worse.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. So let's get into some of the topics and the news that has happened over the recent couple days. Big names have gone off the board. First being David Price, signed a deal with the Red Sox. It's the largest total contract for a pitcher in Major League Baseball history. 7 years, $217 million. That's $31 million a year. He does have that opt-out after the third year like CeCe had. So assuming he has three good to very good years, he's probably going to opt out. And we'll see if the Red Sox are ballsy enough to let him walk. I mean, in hindsight, that's probably what the Yankees should have done with CeCe. You know, obviously, we don't know if the Red Sox are going to do that. But, you know, Rich, what do you think about this Price signing?
I mean, it's so much money for a guy who is 30. How old is he now? 30?
Yeah, he's going to be 31 next season, at some point next season.
Right. And we know about his postseason numbers, but I mean, he said in his press conference that he's saving all of his postseason wins for the Red Sox, which if I was a Blue Jay fan, I'd be pretty, you know, that's kind of like a back. I don't think Price meant it to be like a.
He was just making light of the situation that he's right. not been very good in the playoffs.
Right. But I mean, you mentioned CeCe. I think this is going to play out for the Red Sox, just like it has for the Yankees with CeCe. It's going to be a great deal for, you know, 3-4 years. And then if he ends up staying with the Red Sox, they're going to really pay for it on the back end.
There's been some, so up in Boston, it's kind of like mixed. People either love it or they're questioning the Red Sox mentality and overall organizational philosophy, I guess, because they didn't sign John Lester last year to probably, 75% of the money? Whatever it turned out to be, even less than that. And then they turn around and give Price all that cash when at least they could say, we know what Lester is. He's been on the team before and he's succeeded in the playoffs. So there's that. Also, if Price can handle Boston, because he gets pretty snappy on Twitter sometimes at fans. And Red Sox fans, much like Yankee fans, are not as laissez-faire as Tampa Ray fans or Blue Jay fans. So that could be an issue as well.
At the end of the day, one of the biggest, I think, things you take away from this is that the Boston Red Sox got David Price based on his regular season success. And a lot of these GMs, I guess they don't put the stock. It's like a reverse thing with a batter, because I think a lot of guys, offensive guys, position players can earn a lot of money in the playoffs, pitchers too. But if you struggle, it's seen as a negative if you're a position player. Whereas if you're an arm, it doesn't affect you as much. And with him getting that massive contract, and then looking at his success or lack of in the playoffs, it's pretty telling. You know what GMs are looking at. They're looking at the long haul, and they're just seeing. I think what they're thinking is that, you know, maybe this guy had a few bad days, and it's not, you know, indicative of what he really is.
Right. I mean, his next playoff start, he could easily go out and, you know, toss 8 innings of. No runs, 2 hits, 10 strikeouts. I mean, I saw a stat with Justin Verlander. I don't remember exactly what the numbers were, but his first, you know, 7 career postseason starts were awful. You know, he had like a 7 ERA or something. And then since then, he's had like a 2 ERA. So, I mean, it could change quickly in the playoffs.
Yeah, and actually, right. CeCe's numbers before he got to the Yankees were not that good in the playoffs. And he obviously turned it around and has been very good in the playoffs for the Yankees, actually.
So there's the question. I mean, we're looking at a CeCe Sabathia contract. I'd say a relatively similar contract in the years, and maybe the money wasn't the same, but in concept it was similar. But CeCe won the Yankees, and we got a championship with him. So if Price wins the chip, is that what they're looking for? I mean, they're looking for that one good year where everything works out and they win one championship, and then that entire contract's worth it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. I think CeCe's worth is, you know, worth every penny for the first 4 years, yeah, and they won a championship. So, you know, it paid off.
So I think them, they're looking at that as a gamble, you know, a 7-year gamble, and that they get one championship.
Right. I mean, teams know they're taking a risk with offering these big money deals. They're gonna love it for the first 3-4 years, but they know that, you know, the price of paying a guy like Price, you're going to have to deal with it for the, you know, the last however many years, 3-4 years, that he's going to be, you know, pretty on the downside. So
they had to do it, though, because their rotation was garbage. They did not have an ace. They didn't even have a number two.
As soon as Dombrowski went over there, you knew that there was going to be a number one signing in Boston. And Price just was, you know, with the history of the two of those guys and, you know, and then his success in the regular season, I should say, in the American League East, or just at least his experience in the American League East, it was a fit. It was a fit for Dombrowski, I think, and the Red Sox. So I'm actually surprised, because there were a lot of speculation and rumors that David Price was also in talks with the Cardinals. They were one of the last teams in, I think, in that.
He was all set to go to the Cardinals until the Red Sox offered him $30 million more.
Right. And you talk about Dombrowski. Imagine being a Tiger fan. You have to suffer with an awful bullpen for years, and then Dombrowski goes to the Red Sox and he gets Kimbrel right away. It's like, if you're a Tiger fan, you've been looking for that closer for years, and then Dombrowski leaves and he gets, you know, the best closer in baseball.
And talking about their bullpen, we were just looking this up before we started recording today, but the Red Sox traded Wade Miley, who was like their number five starter last year, for Carson Smith. If you don't know Carson Smith, I didn't know who Carson Smith was, but he was a pretty damn good reliever for the Mariners last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what Wade Miley will get you. I certainly didn't think the Mariners would give up a guy like Carson Smith. I mean, you look at his numbers. He went 2-5 last year with a 2.31 ERA in 70 games, 70 innings pitched, 49 hits, 92 strikeouts. So if you put him in front of Kimbrel, that's pretty good.
I'm just convinced that the people in Seattle have no idea what baseball is. These guys are making just bonehead move after bonehead move, it feels like. You know, we're already in deep with the Seattle base. Andrew, everybody in Seattle or the entire state hates Andrew, so we might as well pile on top of it. They're just not making good baseball moves. I mean, they're just not. I haven't seen one thing pan out. I mean, all these guys that they brought in last year too, you know, because they spent a lot of money, and they just they haven't put anything together in a long time since like 95.
They're one of those teams that just keeps making kind of like big splashes every year. Not that this is a huge splash, but obviously with Cano, and then remember a couple years ago they got Cliff Lee in a trade, and you think it's like, okay, the Mariners are going to take the next step. And then they're somehow worse than they were the previous year.
This is all Don Mattingly karma from 1995 for beating the New York Yankees and Mattingly having to retire, and then all the good things happen after that. Damn you, Ken Griffey Jr. Damn you.
Was that go ahead, Rich.
I mean, how about Adrian Beltre on the Mariners? Does anyone remember that?
Yeah, he sucked.
Yeah, he wasn't good.
And now they're legitimately talking about Adrian Beltre will make the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about that last year.
I think he's a Hall of Famer.
How? I mean, I'm not saying he isn't, but where did this come from? All of a sudden, it was like Adrian Beltre is a Hall of Famer.
The first thing I always go to is the eye test, and I never in a million years thought Adrian Beltre as a Hall of Famer in my life. That's never crossed my mind. Joe Buck might have been talking about it, actually, but that's about it. I haven't really – when I'm looking at him – but when you break down his numbers and you look at everything, which to me numbers are like almost out the window at this point.
Yeah, you got to use the eye test now.
You got to use the eye test. Yeah, like that's you have to rely on the human element now to elect Hall of Famers, in my opinion. I mean, because numbers are just done. So yeah, so I never saw him as a Hall of Famer. He's got one of the best third base gloves in a long time, but offensively, I don't know. I never felt him as a Hall of Famer.
That was the year the Mariners also got Richie Sexson from the Brewers.
Big sexy,
and big he stunk sexy. Too.
Yeah, he was good with the Indians, but that's about it.
Was he with the Indians or the Brewers?
He was with the Indians.
With the Indians at one point. I think he was with both teams.
Okay.
Richie Sexson, let me talk about – bring him up because I completely forgot about him. But the first thing I thought as soon as you said that is he scares me because I'm scared that Aaron Judge could be Richie Sexson. That's like a scary thought in my mind.
Why, just because he's giant?
I've thought of that.
Yeah, they're similar body types.
Like how many guys that height have been successful?
Right, not that many.
For a long period. I mean, Richie Sexson had his moments, but he wasn't – I mean, he retired at 33, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers now. He hit 45 home runs a couple times. I'm sure that was all natural.
At what point? Yeah, in what era?
2001, and then again in 2003 with Milwaukee. So I did remember
that's right.
With Milwaukee.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, he was better with Milwaukee than Cleveland.
And then he got paid from Seattle, and he stunk.
You gotta give up that Nintendo money.
And then finish his career with our Yankees.
Retired as a Yankee. There you go.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That was 2008. That was a dark time.
Is this the curse of Richie Sexson coming up? God, I hope not. I hope Richie Sexson did not curse us and we just found this out. We just realized there was a curse.
Judge is taller, I think, right? Than Sexson?
Sexson was 6'6". How tall is Judge?
6'7", I believe.
I mean, I don't really know. I mean, every report says that Judge is athletic. He doesn't play like a 6'7" person would, where it's not like lanky and awkward. He seems to be very athletic. So I guess that's encouraging.
Yeah, he's different. He's definitely a different player. I think Sexton is more of he was definitely more of an awkward player in the way that he ran and played the field and things like that. Aaron Judge definitely seems to have more coordination, I'd say, and just he feels more of like a complete player in a 6'7" frame.
He's more of a hitter, like a line drive type guy, I think, than Sexton was just 45 home runs.
Sexton was all uppercut, hit bombs,
which also plays well for Judge because you can, I don't want to say develop power, but it can come once you learn how to hit a little bit more. You can go from being a doubles gap hitter to like a 25 to 30 home run hitter. That happens.
Well, but yeah, Cano, with the 6'7" frame, I mean, it's that much easier.
Right. Cano, I mean, not to compare Cano to Judge, but Cano never hit home runs in the minors, and he comes up to the big leagues, he's hitting 30 home runs a year. So
exactly,
guys can develop power over time.
Let's just hope Judge doesn't go to Seattle in 14 years from now.
You could write another column.
The Diamondbacks also made a splash. So as of last Thursday, Price was the highest paid player, and then as of Friday, Greinke was the highest paid player. He's now making $34.3 million per year, signed 6 years, $206.5 million from the Diamondbacks. Yeah. This was after, I guess, remember we talked about Cueto turning down $120 million from the Diamondbacks, so clearly they're serious. I know they have Goldschmidt, who's one of the best players in baseball, but I mean, they don't really have a great team. To be going after a guy like Greinke, who's not exactly young, I mean, he's a win-now kind of guy. It's kind of interesting for the Diamondbacks to be doing that.
Yeah, $34 million is a lot for a guy who's 32 years old who had, you got to figure he's going to be on the downside soon, right?
It's tough to say that, though, because he had one of the best seasons in recent history for, a Major League Baseball starting pitcher. I mean, the dude had a ridiculous year and probably got robbed of the Cy Young because of the late push by Arrieta. But I think, if you look at beginning to end, Greinke had the better season.
Greinke pitched in L.A., though. That's a great pitcher's ballpark. If I'm not mistaken, Arizona is a hitter's ballpark, right?
I don't know.
I always remember that being a hitter's ballpark because of the desert air. The ball travels pretty well.
That dry air. Yeah. I don't know.
Doesn't that help?
I have no idea.
Oh. I don't know. I'm not a weatherman. Anyway, he's now going to be the guy. All the pressure is on Greinke in Arizona. Kershaw was the number one guy in L.A. It was nice for Greinke to just go out there every day after Kershaw just mowed a team down and sort of, ride that wave. Might be a little different when he's the number one guy. We've known he has a little bit of mental issues in the past.
When you're in Arizona, though, I don't know what the expectations are. Like, I don't know how hard the media is or if the fans are, really expecting greatness out of the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, outside 2001, how much have we seen out of that team, out of that franchise? So I have a feeling the fans are not going to be as tough on a guy that's their number one guy coming over. I think they're just excited that he's there and that they have a guy like that.
They had 2 million attendance in 2015, so that's about half of what the Yankees maybe did, less than half.
So, and the last time they've had a bona fide ace, right, was Randy Johnson. Curt Schilling is when they had those two guys.
Ian Kennedy.
Yeah, that's funny.
I think he won 20 games with them, I think.
Did he?
Yeah. I was kidding, but he did win 20 games, I think.
It's like the opposite of Shelby Miller.
Yeah.
That's like a Nathan Eovaldi season, huh?
No. We'll talk about that later in the year, see if Eovaldi can crack 15 wins again. Samardzija's also gone.
Destroy 15 wins.
$90 million for 5 years for the Giants. The Giants, I know, were targeting Greinke, so I guess Samardzija was their number two choice. It's pretty crazy that a guy with a 4 ERA coming off a pretty mediocre year can get $18 million a year. But I guess that's baseball now, right? That's baseball, Susan.
Yeah, and especially for a guy who doesn't have a lot of innings under his belt, I think that's attractive to teams. Because all these teams worry about Tommy John surgery and whatnot, and Samardzija's coming in with not as many innings as these other guys. So, but it's still amazing that you pitch to a 5 ERA, you still get $18 million a year.
His ERA was 5 this year?
He closed the season with a 6-plus ERA.
4.96. Yeah. It was 4.96 overall.
Wow. Yeah. Second half of the season, he was bad. He was in the sixes, I believe. And, I mean, the place where he showed success was in the National League with the Cubs, right? He had a good year. He showed a little bit when he was with Chicago. Got that deal over in Chicago, on the other side of Chicago. And then now back with a National League team with the Giants. And you know, hopefully they can – they're thinking, I guess he can regain some of that. But it's tough seeing that much money going to a guy with a 5 ERA. That's crazy.
And the Giants, I don't think, are done, right? I mean, they were targeting Greinke. Obviously, they didn't get him, but I've heard rumors that they could get Hayward or
Cespedes.
Yeah. So they're definitely not done. Obviously, they're going for it. They need to retool after missing the playoffs again after they won a World Series. So interesting to be a Giants fan, I guess.
And Tim Lincecum's is he a free agent? Is he on the face of the planet anymore? Talk about a fall, man. That guy just fell off the face of the planet.
Yeah, I don't think he's really relevant anymore.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He did not have a body that was going to be good for long-term success.
Right.
Especially with that windup he had.
Yeah, yeah. It always seemed awkward. I mean, a lot of deception, which is why he was so good. But it just didn't last. And he never got really paid either.
It's kind of like Dontrell Willis. We had good early success, and then I think a lot of it had to do with their mechanics just kind of shot them in the foot, and they couldn't keep it up. Because Dontrell Willis is one of those guys as well who had kind of a herky jerky mechanic. He had a herky jerky
wind up.
Thank you. And he had a lot of deception and had a lot of success early when he was thrown hard, and then people caught up to him. And I think his body caught up to him, and he just couldn't do anything. I think it's a similar situation.
I remember when he was the throw-in for Cabrera going to Detroit, and everyone was like, oh, my God, not only did Detroit get the best hitter, they got a pitcher who could be an ace. And then I don't even think he pitched for them. He was in AAA for most of the next year.
Yeah, he was a name at that point, yeah.
Yeah, so. Speaking of the National League West, there's a lot of stuff going on out there. The Dodgers reportedly traded for Chapman today, but then I guess, Rich, what, that didn't happen, or the Reds are not confirming it? What's going on there?
Yeah, the Reds said that they haven't, it's not official yet and they haven't traded him, but the Dodgers are saying otherwise. But, I mean, we saw this with Matt Kemp, I think, a few years ago when he was, like, traded for a week and there was no news, so. This might take a while to get resolved, but I'd say he'll end up in L.A.
They reportedly got it done without trading their three best prospects, which is pretty surprising because I remember at the trade deadline last year, weren't the Reds asking for something crazy for Chapman? Like pretty much a pick of the top, a pick of two of the team's five best prospects or something?
Yeah, I don't remember what the Reds asked for last year, but if the Dodgers can get Chapman for and not give up Seager, De Leon, or Urias, that'd be, a win for LA, I think.
Definitely brings into question what the Yankees could get for Andrew Miller. And do you think they'd get more or less than what the Reds got for Chapman? My kind of feeling is they'd get not more, either equal to or slightly less.
Yeah, I agree. Chapman is established as a closer, and Miller he showed that he could do it for 1 year. And Chapman is just a freak. You're dealing with 100 miles an hour. Yeah.
Averaging 101 miles per hour on your fastballs. Pretty nasty. It's kind of fun to bring that onto your team.
Right. He's had 100 strikeouts, I think, in four consecutive years as a reliever. And no one in the history of baseball has ever had five consecutive years with 100 strikeouts. So he's on his way to doing that next year. But no, I agree. I think Miller would get a similar return, maybe not as much, but definitely close to him.
So, Scott, we've talked about this, right? If the Yankees are going to be trading Miller, who was their best reliever last year, at least equal to Betances, and expects to be one of their biggest weapons on the team next year, for guys who aren't going to play on the team for a couple years, it doesn't really make much sense, right?
Yeah, I think if you're actually going to listen to the Miller talks and take him seriously, it needs to be somebody who can help you out in the near future. It needs to be, kind of a you know, upper echelon starting pitcher prospect, but it's going to be a young guy. It's got to be a young guy. It can't be a vet. It's got to be somebody who's young, that's more established along, you know, not anybody in single A, double A, maybe triple A. I mean, I think they would consider that, but they have to be a top prospect for in order to Cashman to listen. But I actually do believe he's really listening to this, because I feel like at this point he feels that Andrew Miller is a chip that he can really cash out on at this point, no pun intended. Because I do believe that the Yankees have confidence in Dellin Betances to be their closer in the future. I thought that was the plan all along, because I really do think that when Andrew Miller was signed, they had eighth inning on him. The eighth inning was kind of where they thought he was going to be. So the fact that he took over the ninth inning role and did it very well, I feel like they have the way that the Yankees are thinking. This is just me speculating, but I feel like they're kind of playing with house money at this point, and they can really turn into something good for the future of the Yankees. So I take it seriously that they're listening to Andrew Miller deals.
It's really a question that Cashman needs to think. Do I think that this team as currently constituted, with maybe one or two additions, can win a World Series or at least make a playoff run in the next 3 years, which is when Miller is signed for? And if his answer is no, then he probably should trade him.
Yeah, he's got $27 million left on his deal, which is, you know, reasonable. That's $9 million a year. So he's you've got Chapman gone, Kimbrel gone, Melanson could get moved too. So closers are going to be in high demand. I think Miller has a lot of, his stock's rising, I think.
Well, he's the best one on the market at this point, right? So if someone is looking for somebody, Miller would be the guy via trade.
It would just have to be for a team who thinks they can win now, though. And so it's just not really computing in my head because, okay, you're trading them to a team that thinks they can win now, who would probably only be willing to give up prospects. They wouldn't be willing to give up anybody who can help them now as well. So
right. I know the Astros were interested in Miller. They were interested in signing him last year when he was a free agent. They also wanted Robertson last year, but they obviously missed out on both those guys. So the Astros could be an interesting trade partner, I think.
Well, and also I think relievers, especially guys at the end of the bullpen and in the closer role, can have a long career. And he's 30 years old, so you know he's got a lot of juice still left in him. I mean, he wasn't a closer, you know, before the Yankees. So I mean, I think he came out as a starter. We know the story there. He didn't do as well, and then kind of bounced around a couple teams and really found his role in the bullpen. And he doesn't have a lot of the wear and tear on the arm like a lot of these guys do. So I still think people are looking at him, you know, even if it's not next year or the year after, I think he could be a long-term solution as a closer for another team if they were looking for that.
Right, and he's a lefty, so that right. Obviously, you know, extends his career and his demand, I think.
If Mike Stanton could pitch until he's 49 years old or however the old he was, Andrew Miller could pitch for a very long time.
The Yankees struggled so bad to get a lefty out of the bullpen after Mike Stanton left.
I'm going to raise my kid that has not been born yet to be a lefty middle reliever.
Oh, yeah. Raking in like $4 million a year.
No doubt, dude. You have a job. Kid, you have a job until you're 50.
Just throw strikes. Is Darren Oliver still pitching?
No, I don't think so. Well, Yankees owned him.
He pitched for, I don't even know, like 20 years. Just being mediocre out of the bullpen.
But you know who is still pitching? Oliver Perez is still pitching and pitching out of the bullpen. I think he was on Houston last year.
Yeah,
I think.
He gifted the Yankees a win this year because he couldn't find the plate.
Right, but he was actually like he was kind of effective out of the bullpen. But I remember when the Mets had him, and he was like a rising prospect, and he just got terrible. I mean, he was just like the worst pitcher in baseball. And then all of a sudden, Oliver Perez is back, and he's he's a lefty specialist out of the bullpen. I mean, you could do that for a long time.
Chris Capuano is still.
He'll be a lefty specialist soon.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. Watch. He'll be around forever.
Oh, yeah.
Are the Yankees going to re-sign him?
Just stop that. I was hoping that didn't. No. Pray to God that he's not a lefty specialist on the New York Yankees.
He's mop up. More Yankees rumors today was that they're potentially interested in signing Asdrubal Cabrera for second base. Rich, Scott and I have beaten the second base horse to death on this podcast.
Ref Snyder!
I think you know what Scott wants to do. It seems like they're going to do an Ackley Ref Snyder platoon unless they were to bring in somebody like Ezreal Cabrera. Or a couple weeks ago, we heard some rumors that they could get Castro for Gardner, some sort of trade like that. But Rich, are you cool with them going in with Ref Snyder and Ackley next year as a platoon?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I wish that's what they would do. You know, enough with Ezreal Cabrera. Like, I understand that he's a better defensive in middle infielder, but just give Ref Snyder a shot. You never know what you might have with him, and if you don't, and he goes somewhere else and does well, it's going to be torture to watch. So.
Well, you say Ezreal Cabrera is a better middle infielder, and he's played shortstop the majority of his career. We looked up his stats on defense. He's played 210 games, 1,700 out of 9,000 career innings, which is about 19% at second base. So, yes, I know he's a pretty solid shortstop, and I guess that can translate to second base, but it's not like you're bringing in a Gold Glove winning second baseman. It would be also kind of like a stopgap question mark.
Kind of sounds like Stephen Drew, maybe? A little bit. A little Stephen Drew-ish?
Not far off, really. It's really not far off.
I think it's an insult to call Cabrera a Stephen Drew, because I think anybody being compared to somebody who hit below the Mendoza line for, you know, three quarters of a season is insulting.
But
so
if you
I'm
look
sorry.
At Stephen Drew's stats from, say, 3 years ago, they're pretty much as Drew Cabrera's stats.
Cabrera's a 260 hitter, 270 hitter.
Yeah, I would venture to guess Stephen Drew up until the last year and a half has been about
Stephen
a 260 hitter.
260. Right,
keep talking. I'm looking it up.
Stephen Drew is a 260 hitter in his dreams. I don't. Maybe he was a 260 hitter in college or in high school. I don't know. But yeah, but it seems like a similar move to me. Yeah, it's like it would be a shorter contract for a guy that. You know, plays good defense, you know, is adequate with the bat. But you know what? I don't want that anymore. I'm so sick of looking at that. Give me athleticism. Give me youth. Give me Rob Ref Snyder.
In 7 seasons with Arizona, Stephen Drew hit .266.
Okay. You got
from 06 to 2014, he hit .256.
But essentially, if you were to sign Ezreal Cabrera, it would be a short-term fix for a problem that...
Unless, what do you think
a problem? Why is it a problem right now? It's not a problem.
I was going to say a problem that you might actually have a solution for with Ref Snyder.
Right.
But okay, so what would you say if they packaged Gardner, Ref Snyder, and, say, other prospects for pitching, and then they signed Cabrera?
Then that's fine.
What if they had another deal in the works? Because that just... You know, that would create such a lot. They have Brendan Ryan, too. Don't forget about him.
Oh, yes, Brendan Ryan.
Pete Cosma. That's more minor league depth, but still.
And Cosma is what Stephen Drew should have been last year.
Oh, yeah.
He's a good depth guy, no doubt. I mean, I think that's a good signing, honestly. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. So you're talking about packaging these guys for I'd have to see who the pitcher is, who we get in return. I mean, I'm not opposed to it if it betters the team. I'm saying I don't want to bring in a second baseman as a free agent and have these guys still there. And that it just makes no sense.
Right, just signing Cabrera on his own and having these other guys stay there makes no sense. There would have to be another move, you know. But I'd have to see what that is before I'd be okay.
So if this is Cashman just listening to offers and saying, "Hey, I have contingency moves if I do this and that," then I'm cool with it. You know, it is what it is.
Right.
I just so badly want to see Rob Ref Snyder in the major leagues for a full season. God damn, I want to see it so bad. Let's go. I need to see this.
Like, they brought him up, they sent it, you know, he hit that home run in Fenway, he had some success. They brought him up at the end of the season, he had some success. I think he's hungry. Give the kid a shot.
Right. I just posted a GIF on, check out the Bronx Pinstripes Twitter. It's not a new clip. I've used the clip before. But, I mean, really, the dude can't play defense? I mean, look at it and you tell me he can't play defense. That's an athlete.
Don't you think he's just going to get better, though? He's played
two professional seasons. He's an athlete.
Two professional seasons at second base. He was an outfielder before this. Give him some time to get used to the position.
No doubt.
And I know we've mentioned this before off the air, but Ref Snyder, Bird, Severino, Judge, they all love being around each other, I think.
They're bros. It's a bro squad.
Yeah, they go back and forth on Twitter. They've built up this camaraderie. I just want to see what it looks like for them to be playing together at the major league level for once.
And do you think it's a complete shock and by accident that our new hitting coach came from the minor leagues and who has a lot of experience with these guys? If you think that that's by accident, Yankee fan, look at what's going on there. There's a lot of writing on the wall saying, hey, we want to make this transition smooth for a lot of these guys coming up. I don't believe that the Yankees are looking to trade a lot of these guys. Ruff Snyder is the only wild card to me because I don't understand. I don't know where he stands with the organization. You know, I don't know what happened or whatever. We've talked about that a million times, but there was a reason why we have minor league coaches coming up to the major leagues now, I feel.
Right. And Marcus Thames is a relatively recent former player. You know, he can relate to these guys. And I think that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to get younger in the coaching staff because when they bring these guys up, they want the acclimation to be, you know, seamless. So
they know who they are. They know the hype around what they're doing right now. I believe they know that.
Rich, it was a great point you made about that. They seem to have chemistry, at least off the field. I mean, all we know is really them from social media, but when you look at like a team like the Royals play, they all grew up playing together and you can almost see it in their personality, how aggressive they are. I'm not saying all these guys are going to turn out to be how the Royals system has been, but there is something to be said for growing up playing with one another, growing up through the system. You feed off that. I mean, look at the Yankees in the 90s. They all came up together and they won together. I think it's a lot easier to do that than it is to bring in a collection of guys that have never played with one another before. Might not get along. You never know what's going to happen.
Right. So they've failed together. They've won together. And I think that creates such a strong bond that you can't replicate that by signing a big money free agent. Like, you can't duplicate that.
I think people overlook chemistry in baseball a lot because baseball is such an individual sport on a team. You know, I mean, it's one on one when you're pitching and batting. It's one guy fielding a ball. I think it gets overlooked, the chemistry. But honestly, the chemistry in the dugout and you know, if anybody who's played baseball knows, if you have a good team and you guys all get along and you're having fun in the clubhouse and fun in the dugout, It translates. It makes everything that much better, and you're more loose. You have more confidence in the guys on the field with the other guys you're playing with. You know if Buddy gets up and he gets a hit, that you're gonna follow that up too, because you just have that instant chemistry. You know, it makes a lot of difference, I think, on the field. So
I think good things with the Yankees this year. I thought they had overall good team chemistry. I think
I agree.
They didn't have necessarily the talent on the field at the end of the year, but for the first two thirds of the year, they were pretty good and seemed to be getting along team. Adding some more young guys to that is not going to hurt that. It's only going to help it.
It's been proven this year. I mean, we've seen it over this year and the last year, I think, that Major League Baseball post-steroid era has become a young guys sport. The guys who are young and athletic are dominating the sport, and the teams who have the most young and athletic guys that are gelling together and that are hitting on all cylinders are the ones that are succeeding. It's not the ones that are bringing in the big name free agents that are just a guy who's had success in the past. I think it's a lot of chemistry, a lot of guys gelling together, and I think their Kansas City Royals were a very good example of that.
Right, and that's why free agents now are hitting, you know, they're hitting free agency later than they used to. Now teams are locking up their younger – they see the importance of having younger players.
Yep.
So it's just a big thing that I wish the Yankees would incorporate. So that's why they should stick with Ref Snyder at second base and, you know, use Ackley as a lefty platoon, but give them a chance to start out the season.
And to their credit, Rich, right? They did that, right? During the trade deadline. I mean, they did what we wanted them to do.
Right.
Maybe they didn't go out and get a guy that could have helped the team a little bit more this year, but they didn't. They were never really in the running for any of those big guys, because what it would have taken was our top prospects. And as a Yankee fan, you know, I could speak collectively from the Bronx Pinstripes crew just from our conversations behind the scenes. And from what I see on Twitter from the rest of the Yankee fans. Nobody wanted to give up those guys, even for a guy like Price or, you know, one of the top, or Cueto. Nobody wanted to give that guy up. I feel like Yankee fans are very much invested now in the younger players.
Well, we saw them mortgage the future year after year throughout the 2000s. It's right. Finally nice to see them do something different.
Yep.
All right, so before we get out of here, I want to do five questions with you guys, sort of quick hitters. We'll go to each person on the podcast and just sort of get your take on it. So the first question actually relates to just what we were talking about. But if you were the Yankees, would you trade elite prospects for a pitcher like Chris Sale, Sonny Gray, Jose Fernandez, Shelby Miller? Not that all of those guys are available, but we definitely saw that, you know, Jose Fernandez, the Marlins are making him available. So Scott, would you trade guys we just talked about, Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, maybe even Luis Severino for a top pitcher like one of those guys?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think when we're talking about the guys that you named, the Chris Sales, I'll name two of these guys because I don't think Shelby Miller's on that list. I don't think I would get – maybe I just don't know enough about him. But the Chris Sales and the Jose Fernandez, I would absolutely give up some of our top prospects. And the reason is because these guys are young dudes who have – you know, phenomenal arms, and they are top flight starting pitching. And we've seen now top flight starting pitching wins games, wins in the playoffs, and can win championships. So yes, I think there's a very select few that I would give up some of our big guys for. But if we're talking about young pitching that we can control contracts, yes, I would do it.
Rich?
Yeah, no, that's basically what I was going to say too. I would trade guys like Judge. I don't know about Severino. I'd want to hold on to him if I could, but I would trade elite prospects for Sale, Fernandez, and not – I agree with Scott. I don't know much about Miller and what the hype is around him. And Sonny Gray, I think, gets hurt too much. But I think when you have a chance to get pitchers of the caliber of Sale and Fernandez, I think it's a no-brainer. You have to do it.
Let's quickly talk about the Jose Fernandez stuff today, though. It basically came out that the Marlins are looking for the biggest of all hauls of prospects for Jose Fernandez, which, I mean, makes sense. What's he, 23 years old? I know he just came off Tommy John surgery, but, I mean, really, does that hurt guys' careers anymore? I think it just helps them. So you would be talking about trading Judge, Sanchez, and probably two other, maybe not top, but very good prospects.
Mateo would definitely be in that
Mateo
deal.
Mateo and maybe Lindgren or somebody like that. You'd be talking about giving up a haul like that.
If my team was one piece away from being a world championship caliber team, you know, if I needed that one ace, I would make that deal. But seeing where the Yankees are now, I wouldn't sell the future for one pitcher. So I guess it would have to be, I'd have to look at what the situation of my team is at the moment.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn. It's tough because on the one hand, it's not like Jose Fernandez is 32 years old and you got 3 years to win with him. You could have 10 years to win with him. So
he's a stud. I mean, the kid's a stud. That's probably the one guy. Chris Sale's a little bit older, but I think Jose Fernandez is that one guy that you're looking at giving a lot up for.
Chris Sale is the nastiest out of all those guys, though.
I hate Chris Sale. He's filthy. And I can't stand when we see him.
All right, let's go to the next question. So as it stands now, if the season started tomorrow, the rosters are what they are. In the AL East, ranking the five teams, how would you rank them? Rich?
I got to go Blue Jays 1 because they're the defending AL East champs. Red Sox 2, Yankees 3, Orioles 4, Rays 5.
Scott?
Yankees, Red Sox, Blue Jays, Orioles, Rays.
You're such a homer.
I'm just optimistic. I feel like the things that we did this year with the team that we had, we can only do better. Let's go.
So the Blue Jays offense,
the Blue Jays are going to suck.
No, they're not going to suck because their offense is disgusting.
Now I mean, hate the Blue Jays. I hate the Blue Jays. I just put a line in the sand. I hate them. I hate them.
Oh, I put a line in the sand like 5 months ago.
But, and I'm glad Price went to the Red Sox because I hate them again too.
But I think people are underselling how mediocre the Blue Jays rotation is. I mean, Stroman looks like he's going to be a solid pitcher, but is J.A. Happ really scaring anybody? He's probably going to be their number two.
They just got Chavez too, Jesse Chavez. He's all right.
But the point is,
did that just happened.
Not just right now, but
I didn't see that signing. Yeah, that's a decent signing. You're right, though, Andrew. The Blue Jays line, the Blue Jays rotation, much like this year, didn't scare me much. And I think until they added a lot of those guys, I don't know.
They're going to have to bash to win games, which they're capable of doing. So I think if I were ranking them, I would go Blue Jays. I would say a healthy Yankees team is number two. I know I'm putting
you that can't put that caveat in there.
Yankees, Red Sox, Rays, Orioles, which I think is what Rich said. But Yankees and Red Sox is going to be pretty close next year. I mean, even though we kind of bashed the Price signing that it's way too much money, it still obviously makes them a much better team. So, and they were starting to come on at the end of the year.
No, they're definitely a better team. There's no doubt. Their offense is going to be good. Their offense is what really picked up last year. And their outfield's kind of scary, actually. They're extremely athletic in the outfield.
Yeah, they got three young center fielders. Yeah, three center fielders playing the outfield.
It's crazy. And I mean, who knows with that kid Makata too? What he's going to do if he takes another step up? You know, we might see him at the end of the year.
Dude, he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime of bodybuilding. That guy is massive.
Yeah,
who's that?
And
Yasiel
Puig looks similar to that, and we've seen what he hasn't done after his first year. So we'll see.
What were you saying, Rich?
That football player that kept getting suspended for LeRon Landry.
Yeah.
He's like LeRon Landry of baseball. He's just massive.
He was a Jet for a minute.
All right. So third question. We just saw two of the biggest contracts in Major League Baseball history with Price and Greinke. Bryce Harper is going to be a free agent after the 2019 season, in which case he'll be 25 years old. Scott, put a number on it. How much? What's his contract years and money going to be?
Okay, so I'm not the capologist in this group, but I'll tell you this. I think at 2019, I think the trend for contracts, you know, we saw Giancarlo Stanton sign a 12-year contract that was some like stupid money, like what, $300 some million. That first of all, it's a 12-year contract on paper. It's not really a 12-year contract. It's like a 6-year contract because he's got an opt out and he's going to opt out. And then we're seeing we're just not seeing as many long-term deals anymore. And I think when 2019 hits, a guy like Bryce Harper is going to get the most money per year of any Major League Baseball player ever. I think he's going to get the most lucrative yearly contract. But I can see more contracts, you know, starting to go in the way that the Greinke contract went this year. I think, and for you Mets fans, if you're listening to this, if anybody are crossovers, the Bobby Bonilla, if you will, which is like my favorite thing to talk about. He's like the fifth highest paid guy in the Mets right now. But I think we're going to see more deferred contracts. I think we're going to see, you know, maybe shorter term contracts, but rather than like a signing bonus, what they're going to do is start deferring a lot of the money towards after retirement. I see that as a trend because, you know, I feel like a lot of these contracts are getting overblown and people aren't living up to them, but, you know, they can get their bang for their buck in the beginning and then defer the money later, which helps the team with cash flow as well. So I kind of see that as a trend moving forward. But I do believe in 2019 when Bryce Harper is, when he is a free agent, he's going to warrant the highest yearly salary of any baseball player ever.
All right, Rich, you're Brian Cashman or some other GM in 2019. What are you signing Harper for?
I mean, his agent's Scott Boras, right? So he's going to want the top of the top, the best deal he can get. He's not going to sign a hometown discount.
$3 billion.
I say it's going to take $400 million, I'd say.
Oh, that's so ridiculous.
I'd say $350 to $400 million.
Okay. Well, I say $450.
For how many years?
12 years.
Right. But there's not. See, that's the thing about these contracts, though. You're saying 12 years. Like, okay, that's fun and games to like look at a contract and be like, oh my God, it's 12 years for $400 million. But there's going to be a clause in there at like 6 years saying, you know, the player would be dumb not to have a six year clause to say, let me renegotiate.
So I just did the math. $450 divided by 12 is 37.5. So I'm upping it to $500 million.
But it's not going to be. It's not going to be that every single year. It's going to be different. You know, per year.
He's going to get $40 million a year for like 10 to 12 years. Just it's insane the way baseball contracts are going, and he's going to be 25 years old in the middle of his 20s. Probably him and Trout will still be the best two players in the league. He's going to get ridiculous contract that is going to make people throw up, unless it's the Yankees, in which case I'll be very excited. Because, again, it's not my money.
Like how, and to go a little bit off Bryce Harper, but how good is it to be Matt Harvey, Noah Syndergaard, Steven Matt? How good is it to be those guys right now, knowing you're going to – I mean, I can't even imagine.
If I was one of those guys, I'd go buy stuff right now, just knowing I'm getting $300 million in a few years.
It's insane.
The other thing we're not considering, too, is the luxury tax. The amount of luxury tax that's going to be paid by a lot of these guys at that point is going to be significant. So, you know, I know we're talking about contracts getting longer and bigger and bigger and longer, but I really do – I feel like people are going to start getting more creative with the contracts. I think they have to, because at some point you just can't – you know, fiscally do these things. It just doesn't work.
If you're I think about like the best athletes in the other sports making half of what these guys are
making. I know, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't work. It's crazy.
And baseball is by no means the most popular sport. It's probably the third most popular in the country behind football and basketball, at least by average ratings or whatever they go by. But you know how we've seen a trend? People have said, oh, throughout the 90s and 2000s, kids stopped playing baseball and they started playing football and soccer and basketball and other sports.
Lacrosse.
You might see them go back to baseball because it's like, I'm a great athlete. I'm going to get triple the amount of money in baseball than I could get in another sport. And I'm not going to be brain dead like I would be in football.
Yeah, you don't get concussed.
It's like, it's just, I don't know, you might see a trend the other way with all this money being thrown around in baseball.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers is getting $22 million a year.
Yeah, and he's better in his profession than Greinke is in his profession. Or he's more important, not better, because Greinke is one of the best pitchers. But he's more important to the Packers than Greinke will be to the Diamondbacks.
Well, and also there's a hell of a lot less of them. There's fewer football players, you know, making that kind of money than baseball players. There's a hell of a lot of baseball players making that kind of money.
I think I saw somewhere where this was after Price signed. It was like Steph Curry plus all of the Mets starting pitchers are making what David Price will make before the All-Star break.
My favorite stat I saw about that was Price is making $1 million more than it cost to build PNC Park.
Poor Pittsburgh.
I just saw gas for $1.83. It hasn't been that low since, like, what, 95. This is the way I see baseball contracts. I see baseball contracts going up and, like, getting crazy, ridiculous, and then somebody actually seeing the light and being like, what in God's name are we doing? There's no possible way we can make any money off of this. And then them actually making some sense and being a little bit more creative with these contracts. I don't see them just keep scaling up. I feel like at some point they're going to have to level out and come back to Earth and say, you know, hi Earth, this is a contract that we can actually make money with.
Because then ticket prices are going to go up too, right?
Yeah, I mean, nobody's going to go to the games again. It's going to be the same. And then steroids are going to be back. And
well, you know, it's going to be another
A-Rod's
going to
be playing when he's 60.
I don't hate that.
Like, what's going to be the price of beer in 10 years at a baseball game?
$50.
So you could pay Bryce Harper's contract.
I was just watching Field of Dreams. It was on HBO. And it was a scene when they're at Fenway. And James Earl Jones is like, oh, two hot dogs and two beers. It's for the both of them. And I think it was like, okay, that'll be $7.50. It's like a bottle of water at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
Half a bottle of water.
Yeah.
It's bad.
All right, going on to the next question.
But if you do get a bottle of water, go to Cousin Brewski.
Yes. Moving off of baseball topic for a minute here, right now in sports, we got the Panthers and the Warriors who are undefeated. What do you think is more likely to happen? Panthers go 16-0 undefeated on the regular season, or the Warriors beat the Lakers 33-game win streak, which I think is from the mid-70s. Rich, what could you see happening?
I could see. I think the Panthers going 16-0 is more likely because I look at the Warriors schedule and I see LeBron James against the Warriors on Christmas,
and that'll be for 33.
Right. I think it ends there.
Really? You think if they make it to 32, they won't get to the next game?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You think LeBron will be the stopper?
I do.
LeBron has never been
drama.
The stopper.
That is some drama right there. That's good stuff. I really hope that happens. I hope it comes down to that at least.
And if you look at the Panthers' schedule, they play the Falcons twice. They play the Giants.
And the Bucks. Looking at it right now.
The Bucks are better than we thought, though. Not that they're good, but they're better than the Falcons.
It's a home game for Carolina too.
And just the way Carolina pulled out this game yesterday, I think they have their eyes set on 16-0 for sure.
All right, Scott.
I didn't realize what the Carolina Panthers schedule was. I'm looking at it right now. They're gonna go 16-0. There's no way they're not gonna go 16-0. Like Rich said, they got the Falcons twice. Matt Ryan's just a train wreck right now. God, I started in my fantasy team for some stupid reason over Blake Bortles this week, and I hate Matt Ryan. I looked at his numbers and I saw that the Bucs had like two pass rushers out. I'm like, oh yeah, he threw for like 400 yards almost the last time. He sucked.
Was that game in Atlanta?
No, it was in Tampa Bay.
That's your first mistake. You don't start Matt Ryan on the road.
It doesn't matter. It's in Tampa Bay. It's like it's a great day in Tampa Bay all the time, isn't it? So it doesn't matter. But the thing is, Bortles goes for 5 touchdowns. Whatever. Thankfully, I won the game, so no harm, no foul. But I will never make that mistake again. But I'm looking at the schedule, and so it's the Falcons at the Giants, at the Falcons, and then home against the Bucks. They're not losing those games.
The Giants are pretty good at breaking streaks.
Yeah, the Giants like it's go weird and like you know, and like Eli goes for 8 touchdowns, but I don't know. I don't see it happening. Cam Newton looks like the MVP right now.
Oh, he's definitely since the Patriots lost 2 games, he's got it beat over Brady.
And he's getting a lot of fans too. He's getting a lot. He's becoming one of my more favorite players in the NFL. Like, one, the dude's like an amazing guy off the field. He does like really good things for kids. Every game before, he's like Tebow with the kids. And then on the field, he's
anti-Tebow on the field.
But yeah, exactly. He can actually throw a ball. And he's getting better. And he's got a cannon. And he's a massive human being. He's just a freak.
And they don't even have Benjamin. At wide receiver, you imagine if they had Kevin Benjamin this year,
how much better it'd be.
He's got Greg Olsen to throw to. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's his security.
Ted Ginn dropped 2 easy touchdown passes that were bombs. This pass, I was watching that game. He dropped 2 like Hail Mary touchdowns that were like 80 or 60 plus yard touchdowns. 2 of them dropped them, easy touchdowns.
Well, considering the Panthers almost blew a game to the Saints, who are not very good, I don't know. I see them losing a game. I think the Warriors are going to get to 33 games. I see that happening.
Who are they going to lose to?
The Panthers? They'll
lose to the Giants.
They're going to lose to the Giants, yeah. Or they'll lose one of those Falcons games. Because, I don't know, I saw that defense give up like 36 points or whatever to the Saints.
I mean, that's Breezy just clicking. You know, Breezy clicks, then watch out. Breezy just hasn't clicked yet. Until yesterday. We'll see.
Yeah, and the only Giants I see are the ones that almost beat the Patriots.
You secretly kind of love the Giants. Like, if the Patriots didn't exist, you'd be a Giants fan.
I would, because my grandfather was a huge Giants fan.
See, there it is. It's the Yankees deep family Giants history. Fan. There you go, Rich. It's the deep family history. You got him.
My dad says he's a Patriots fan, but he's not. He's a Cowboys fan. I only get text messages about the Cowboys. I never get text messages about the Patriots. So, all right, last question, and we'll get out of here. So, I don't know if you guys saw this today. Papelbon filed a grievance against the Nationals because that whole issue with Bryce Harper when he got suspended. He was suspended without pay, so he's complaining that he wasn't paid. So, he filed a grievance with the Nationals. Got me thinking, if you had to rank the 3 biggest a-holes in sports, who would they be? Scott, we'll start with you.
Ah, damn it. Okay, so Papelbon's definitely up there. I'm going to put him number two. Because I don't even know who number 3 would be, but I know who number 1 is. Number 1's like the guy I can't stand the most, and it's AJ Pierzynski. I think AJ Pierzynski is the biggest asshole in Major League Sports. I think he's a good teammate. I think like when you're on his team, you like him, and he's like you want him to be on your side. But when you're playing against him, who was that – Jason Barrett, last name Barrett.
I think it was Jason.
He He was the catcher for the Cubs when Pierzynski, I believe, was on the White Sox, and just clocked him just because it was like everything every Major League Baseball player wanted to do, and Barrett did it for him and just clocked him. And it was like one of my favorite highlights. I think I watched that 50 times. I wish Vine was around then so I could just – I actually am going to turn that into a Vine and put it on Bronx Pinstripes just because of this conversation. But A.J. Pierzynski is my number one a-hole in Major League sports. Well, number speaking, three, speaking I don't Pierzynski, know. I don't have a number three.
Pierzynski, really quickly, Ozzie Guillen, I think, had the best quote on him. I just looked it up because I couldn't quite remember it. But it's, if you play against him, you hate him. If you play with him, you hate him a little less.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, there's guys that you want on your team and that you don't want. Like Matt Barnes in the NBA. Like, everything I hear about this dude is, like, you want him on your team. Like, he'll go after people and he'll defend you. But if he's against you, you can't stand him. Like, he's just so irritating. He's just one of those guys. So, yeah, Pierzynski's my guy. I don't like him. And number three is, like, every Red Sox, like, Mike Timlin. I hate Mike Timlin.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Timlin's one of my least favorite players all time.
That's a good one.
All right, Rich, what do you got?
I put Carlos Gomez number one. I can't stand that guy.
So he really got under your skin last year, huh?
He's just such a clown. Like, he's a clown. Two would be Papelbon. Three, I could do Pierzynski. There was a time where he was voted every year in that SI poll as like the most hated guy in baseball. So
I can
do that.
He's just such a dick.
Yeah, he really is.
He's just such a
dick.
He's
got one of those faces that you just want to.
Yeah, he just.
Yeah, he's such
exactly.
That's why Barry. I'm so happy when he punched my. Everybody was like, everybody was so happy that I think the umpires kind of took a step back as soon as it happened too, just for a second.
Right, and if. I could also fit Greg Hardy in at number three, but that's a whole different level.
Yeah,
of,
that's like a different.
I'm going
different,
more. Yeah, this was
that's,
more
that's
like
a different list.
Who
so.
You hate just because he's kind of a jackass and
yeah.
Also,
I don't think Pierzynski's a bad human being. I don't know enough about him. Greg Hardy's just a scum of the earth.
Part of this is you got to be like good enough. Sorry, what I was saying is part of this you got to be like good enough to be hated. Because if you suck, then you're just not going to be hated. It's like Papelbon was a good pitcher for a while, so that's why I think everyone hated him.
If we have a top five list, I have a new one who I just thought of. I totally forgot about Brett Lowry. I hate that. I hate that dude. This year made me hate him even more too, with the antics he was pulling. I can't stand that guy. Put him on my list too.
So you guys went just baseball. I have two that are non-baseball. One of them is Floyd Mayweather, who I just can't stand, and I think he's a boring boxer, which makes me even more mad because he makes like David Price money for every fight. And then the other one is Kobe Bryant. Everyone is loving Kobe.
Oh, I don't mind Kobe.
Everyone is loving Kobe during this farewell tour. Meanwhile, he's throwing up 45 bricks a game, being selfish hog that he is. I don't know. Can't stand Kobe.
I don't mind Kobe. Kobe. It's Kobe. You know, like every time I shoot a three, I yell Kobe. Kobe. He's just one of those guys.
All right, so. Any last words, guys? Any last words about the baseball meetings? Any bold predictions of what's going to happen with the Yankees over the next week or so?
I think one thing I didn't mention or I forgot to bring it up was Cliff Lee's a free agent. So
yeah, yep.
I just got something from him. 15 teams are in on Cliff Lee. That's what I just got.
Yeah, a bunch really? Of probably like here's $5 million, but if you make 25 starts, you can make 15 or something like that.
Yeah,
because he hasn't thrown a pitch since the summer of 2014. A long time ago.
I'm done with Cliff Lee. He's burned his bridges on, in my mind.
Everyone has nightmares about Cliff Lee catching that pop-up, not looking at it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Rich, thanks for coming on this week.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll catch you guys next time.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.